That might sound a little silly, but you know what I found out when I was reading and studying is that the Jewish people in the Old Testament did not allow their sons to read the Song of Solomon until they were 30 years old. Apparently they found some stuff in there that they thought was inappropriate for those under 30 years old. I think when we have the right understanding of the book, we don't have any issues at all. We don't have any problem. And depending on where a person's mind is, I think maybe some people's minds tend to go a certain direction, and so that could have something to do with it too. But the book of Song of Solomon is a wonderful book, and let's get started too so we use our time wisely tonight. The Song of Solomon is one of Solomon's 1,005 songs. You don't have to turn there, but the reference is 1 Kings 4:32. We looked at it a couple of weeks ago when we were studying Proverbs. Solomon wrote 5,000 Proverbs and 1,005 songs. Now, you know the Bible is precise because it didn't round it off to 1,000 songs. It said 1,005. All right, that's a pretty exact number. And this song, the Song of Solomon, is probably his best song. We say that because verse 1 says, the Song of Songs. Out of all the 1,005, this was probably his masterpiece. This was his best song. And it is, there's our first blank, a love song. All right, it's a love song. Now some of you, when we're done, might say, oh, it's a beautiful ballad of love. Some of you might say, that's a country western song, because he loses the girl. And that's how those always go. You lose the dog, you lose the house, anyways. The second paragraph. The narrative of Song of Solomon. That is, as you're reading these eight chapters, and if you've ever read these or tried to absorb it, you have found that it can be difficult to follow. And here's the reason. There are no breaks to indicate change of scene or speakers. Now that can be true in all the Bible, but most of the Bible is a little bit clearer to understand. We know who's talking. We know who they're talking to. We know where they're at. When you read the Gospels and the other accounts of the New Testament, that's kind of clear. But here in Song of Solomon, this type of poetry or this type of a song is a little bit different because it doesn't clearly designate who's speaking when and where they are when they speak it. And that you're going to see, we're going to try to get into that. Special attention needs to be used to discern who is speaking, to whom they are speaking, and where they are when they are speaking. It's kind of like a play. And you're going to see in our outline at the bottom of the page, I tried to break it into scenes. Scene one, scene two, as if we're looking at a play. And I put in here, it is like attending a Shakespearean play. I'm sure all of us cultured folks do that. Or any other play for that matter. But it'd be like going to a play with your eyes closed. Now imagine if you've ever been to one, maybe at the Performing Arts Theater in Cambridge or somewhere else in Columbus, if you're ever watching a play, and if you couldn't see when they change the scenes up there, you don't know from one scene to the next. I remember seeing, 76 Trombones Leads the Big Parade, that one, whatever that one is. The Music Man. Or I remember seeing The Music Man at Cambridge Performing Arts many years ago, and starts on a train, and you see that, then the next scene is in the town. Well, if you couldn't see that, and you're guessing, you wouldn't know what's going on. It'd be hard. You also wouldn't be able to differentiate necessarily between the different speakers. Now, you know if it's a man or a woman, but especially Shakespearean, they'd all be in British accents. Who can tell the difference? They all sound alike. So that's what reading the book of Song of Solomon is like. It's like watching this play with your eyes closed. And so you have to pay special attention to figure out who's speaking. And doing that has come up with different interpretations of the book of Solomon, the Song of Solomon. There are two main interpretations. The first one is many see two main characters. Two, T-W-O, not T-O-O. Two main characters. Those main characters are Solomon and the Shulamite. Now you say, well, who in the world is the Shulamite? Well, we get that from chapter 6 and verse 13, the last verse. Return, return, O Shulamite. Return, return, that we may look upon thee. What will you see in the Shulamite? As it were, the company of two armies. The woman, the main woman in this story, and we'll talk about her more in a minute, but the main woman in this story is a Shulamite, all right? That is her her racial background, that is where she's from. And so they see two people, Solomon and the Shulamite. In this interpretation, Solomon the king loves the beautiful peasant woman. That's the Shulamite. She's out working in the field. She's taking care of the vines. She's setting traps for the foxes. You read all that in the book of Song of Solomon. And this woman that's out there, and because of that, her skin is very dark from the sun. We see that in chapter 1. So this woman that's out there, the king goes by and sees her out working in one of his vineyards, according to chapter 8. Her whole family works in one of his vineyards, and he sees her. And he takes her for his. Who typed that? I'm going to have to talk to my secretary there. And takes her for his bride. All right, is that right? Does that sound right? Okay. And so he sees this working woman alongside of the road. He thinks she's beautiful, so he picks her up and takes her home to the castle to marry her. It is a story of love between a sovereign monarch and a simple maiden. Oh, isn't that a wonderful story? How many romance novels have been set that because the powerful, wonderful prince or whoever it is, marries the simple little maiden and brings her into royalty. So that's the book of Song of Solomon, if there's two main characters. Now, that would be the historical story, and that is the main thrust of the book. It is a historical story that Solomon is writing a song about. As with everything in the Bible, then we make a spiritual application. Well, to the Jews in the Old Testament, the application was this. Solomon represented Jehovah, and the Shulamite represented the Jews. And it was a story between Jehovah and the Jews. Jehovah was the sovereign. He is the monarch. He is the one that has everything. And yet, in his goodness, he falls in love with that lowly peasant, that is the nation of Israel, and marries them, and she becomes his bride. For those in New Testament times, they've taken the same story and applied it to us, and that simply is that Solomon represents Christ, and that the Shulamite represents the church. And as Christ loved the church and came and picked us up from where we were and took us back to the palace one of these days and married us, that is the gist of the story of Song of Solomon. Now, obviously, there's a lot of details in that story, and we don't have time to go through that, but that's the gist of that interpretation. Number two. The first one's the most popular. Number two. Others see three main characters. Three main characters. And that would be Solomon, the Shulamite, and the shepherd. And the shepherd is in chapter 1, verse number 6. That doesn't look like... Did I say 1:6? That's supposed to be 1:7. Boy, I'm going to fire my secretary. You're fired. Okay. The others see three. Chapter 1, verse 7. Tell me, this is the Shulamite speaking, tell me, O thou whom my soul loveth, where thou feedest, and where thou makest thy flock to rest at noon. For why should I be as one that turneth aside by the flocks of thy companions? This woman... There's the shepherd there, and I'm getting ahead of myself. All right. It is the story of a lovely peasant girl, same one, the Shulamite, who is in love with a lowly shepherd boy. All right. Now we've got a new twist. Now we've got a triangle, a love triangle. All right. The lovely peasant girl who's in love with a lowly shepherd boy. But one day, the king, that's Solomon, passes by, and upon seeing the woman's beauty, he takes her to his palace with the intent of wooing her and marrying her. I like this next line. Solomon wants the Shulamite. Solomon wants the Shulamite, but the Shulamite wants the shepherd. All right, you see the triangle? Solomon the king wants that peasant woman, but that peasant woman wants the shepherd boy. Can I put this into more modern language for you? And let's see if I can keep you. This is Humperdinck loves Buttercup. Okay, but Buttercup loves Wesley. How many of you know what I'm talking about? Anybody in this room? Nobody in this room. I told this to Lewis today, and he about rolled over dying, rolling on the floor laughing. The Princess Bride is a movie from the 1970s. If you haven't seen it, go rent it tonight. Man, I'm speaking to a bunch of culturally challenged people. That's all there is to it. Humperdinck, the great king, falls in love with Buttercup. But Buttercup is in love with the shepherd boy Wesley, and the whole story is about Humperdinck trying to win Buttercup's affection, but she's in love with Wesley and all that. It's a hilarious movie. It is a funny, funny movie. You gotta watch it. No more rhymes. I mean it. Anybody want a peanut? You know who spoke those lines? What was that? What's that guy Daryl had, the big guy that did the headlock on? Not Hulk Hogan. Who is it? Andre the Giant. That's who's in that movie. Andre the Giant. And it's The Princess Bride. All right. It's a 1970s, you old fogies. It's a 1970s movie. Or 80s. I don't know. Something like that. But you got to watch that. Anyways, that's what this story is too. It's the same thing. Solomon wants the Shulamite, but the Shulamite wants the shepherd. The woman, while in the palace, in other words, Solomon sees her by the roadside, sends for her, brings her back to the palace with the intention of marrying her, but she longs for the shepherd to come and take her away from the palace. She doesn't like life in the palace. She'd rather be with the shepherd. The conversation then goes back and forth between the Shulamite and the shepherd, with brief comments of the king interspersed as he tries to win her affections by impressing her with his power, appearance, and wealth. Solomon's trying to win the heart of this peasant woman, but her heart belongs to the shepherd boy. And so Solomon does all he can to impress her, to show her the palace and his wealth and his strength and all that stuff, but he cannot win her heart. Does that sound like a Bible book? Or does that sound like, you know, Hallmark movie or something like that? Or The Princess Bride, if you knew what that was. The daughters of Jerusalem appear, and we'll talk about that in a little bit, but the daughters of Jerusalem appear in here, and they don't see what the king sees in this Shulamite. I mean, we're back in the day, you think of the Egyptians, the pharaohs and all that, that the women, the more pale their complexion, the more beautiful they were considered. I mean, even to death pale, all right? They just, and really, when you study Egyptian and the pharaohs and all that, that's what it was. The paler you were, the more beautiful you were considered. But this woman, as you see in chapter 1, verse 5, I am black, but comely, O ye daughters of Jerusalem, as the tents of Kedar, as the curtains of Solomon. Look not upon me, because I am black, because the sun hath looked upon me. My mother's children were angry with me. Some preachers call this the Cinderella story. My mother's children were angry with me. They made me keeper of the vineyards. We read about her family over at the end of chapter 8 again. But mine own vineyard have I not kept. So she's out in the sun working every day, and her complexion is very dark, which was not popular back then. So the other women are thinking, you should be so fortunate. You are so blessed that King Solomon would take the time to look at you. And they couldn't understand why she wanted instead the shepherd when she could have the king. And so the daughters of Jerusalem all throughout this story are constantly prodding the Shulamite and trying to get her to come to her senses and realize she could be Solomon's wife. Of course, it might have been something in it for the daughters of Jerusalem too. You remember Esther? In the book of Esther, when she was called in and she might be seen by the king, and if she was chosen, then all of her maidens would have become the maidens of the queen. So these daughters of Jerusalem probably had a stake in this too, because if this Shulamite, as much as they didn't think she was very pretty, if she got chosen and married, they became the queen's handmaids instead of just another woman's handmaid. But they keep trying to prod her also. The king eventually gives up on his attempts to win the Shulamite's heart and sends her back home, chapter 8, where the shepherd awaits. The application, again, this is the historical story. And that is the main emphasis. We've got to always remember, the story is the main thing. Now, the application we can make from that is this. The Shulamite would be the church. And the shepherd would be the Lord Jesus. All right? Instead of Solomon and then the Shulamite is the church, Shulamite's still the church. But the shepherd, the one who's got her heart, the one that she longs for and wants to return to, is Jesus Christ. And in this, Solomon would be the prince of the world. Now, one reason I saw a lot of the guys that go with number one don't go with number two is because they don't like to slam Solomon. Well, Solomon in some ways is a type of Christ in the Old Testament, but here's a guy, look in Song of Solomon, look at chapter 6 and verse number 7. This is Solomon speaking in chapter 6, verse 7. We'll get to that in just a moment. And he's trying to impress this young woman as he wants to marry her. And he says in verse 8, there are 70 queens and 40 concubines and virgins without number. You know what he's telling her? He said, I already have 60 wives. Now, if you know the end of Solomon's story, how many does he have at the end of his life? He's got 1,000 wives. And 300 concubines. So he's just getting started. He's only got 60 wives at this point out of the 1,000 he's going to have. And 80 concubines out of the 300 he's going to have. But he says to her in verse number 9, my dove, my undefiled, is but one. You know what he's telling her? I've already got 60 wives and 80 concubines, but you are the one. You are it. And if you will marry me, I will make you number one. Here's the type. That's the devil. That's the devil trying to get you and I, the Shulamite, the church, to lose our affection for Jesus Christ, for what he has to offer. And we're just another number to the devil. We're not that important, but he makes us all kinds of offers and promises that he has no intention of keeping if we just give his heart to him instead of giving it to the shepherd. So that's the picture, the allegory, as it were, of this real story that's happening here in this place. Solomon would be the prince of the world who wants to steal her affections, and the daughters of Jerusalem would be the people of the world who do not understand her allegiance to the shepherd. And that's the way the world looks at you and I today. We're Shulamites. We're black. We're nothing to look at. And yet the shepherd loves us. And the devil also wants to woo us. And the daughters of Jerusalem, the earthly crowd around here, doesn't understand our allegiance and our fidelity to the shepherd. Why we would love him when the world can offer us so much more. That's the picture and the story going on in Song of Solomon. What an amazing story. There is a third interpretation. I did not put it here, and I'll just give it to you briefly. The second interpretation is Warren Wiersbe's. If you're familiar with Bible commentators, so you don't think I'm... And the second one is the one that I think is the right one. All right, I like the first one. I like the Solomon interpretation. But I see the second one. I see, and you're going to see in the outline in just a minute, I see that second one being more accurate of what's there. But what Ironsides and Wilmington do is they say there are three. There's Solomon, the Shulamite, and the shepherd, but the shepherd is actually Solomon incognito. He dresses, when he can't win the woman because of his royalty and impress her, he dresses like another shepherd and wins her affections that way, and so they interpret the book that way, and that kind of goes off. But there, just so you know, there's more than one interpretation to this story, but I go with number two, and that's what the outline will be based on in just a moment. The key words and phrases always give us an indication of the thrust of the book, and it's that way here. Notice the phrase, my beloved, appears 25 times. My beloved. And all 25 of those times, I don't think I'm mistaken, is the Shulamite talking about the shepherd. All right, not Solomon, but the shepherd. When Solomon comes in and says, oh my love, oh my spouse, 6 times in chapter 4 to chapter 5, 1, Solomon trying to win her affection comes in and, oh, you're so beautiful and your teeth are white as doves, you know, wings and all this kind of stuff. And he says to her, my love, my spouse, my spouse, my spouse. He's trying to win her affection, but she says, no, my beloved. And she's talking about the shepherd. My beloved. She's keeping her heart right. So my beloved appears 25 times. The phrase my love appears 12 times. And that is Solomon using that term 2 times. It's used by the shepherd talking about the Shulamite. And those are the first two times, and I kind of think Solomon maybe overheard that and said, oh, that's what'll win her heart if I call her my loves. And so the next 10 times, it's him calling her that. The next thing is the daughters of Jerusalem. That appears 7 times. Again, that is that crowd surrounding the woman trying to push her into a relationship with Solomon when her heart is for the shepherd. And that's a picture of the world pushing us away from the shepherd and toward the prince of the world. And then the last phrase is the phrase, my spouse, and I mentioned that already, appears 6 times. That's in chapter 4, beginning in verse number 8, down to chapter 5, verse 1. That one long speech that Solomon makes as he's trying to butter her up and win her heart and say all these nice flowery birthday card comments. He says, my spouse, 6 different times. All right, let's look at the overview. Can I tell you this? Out of the 22 books we've done so far, this was without a doubt the hardest one to make an outline on. And I kind of have a suspicion that as we finish out the Old Testament, by the time we get to Malachi, I'll be telling you, Song of Solomon was the hardest one to try to get an outline on, because I had to read it just like I told you, like a blind man. They can't see the scenes change and can't specify who's speaking at any time. I had to go into it and look at it that way. And I'm going to give it to you that way. And if you don't agree with it, it's a free country. You're welcome to be wrong as long as you want to be wrong. And I won't hold it against you. That's no problem. You understand? And folks, here's what's important, brother. You understand when we talk about this, we're not talking about the deity of Christ. We're not talking about the necessity of the blood atonement. There are some things that are very important and vital and we can't disagree on. There's some things we can. How many angels can fit on the head of a pin? All right? We can disagree on that. It's okay. Can God make a rock so heavy he can't lift it? Now, number one, that's a stupid question. And that's one I remember we spent hours at Bible college at night discussing on whether God, if he can't, then he's not God because he's not omnipotent. If he can, then he's not God because he can't lift it. So there's no good answer to that question. But some things are, and I hate using these words, some things are essential and some things are non-essential. Now the problem in our day with the contemporary church movement is they've taken a lot of essentials and put them in the non-essential category. And so that's why I hesitate using those words, essential and not essential. But the interpretation of Song of Solomon is not a big deal. So here we have the overview of it. Scene number one. We open the curtains and scene number one is in the palace. It's in the palace. You'll notice off to the right, I have tried, and I think this is accurate. I mean, as far as I can tell, I did this. I haven't seen this done by anybody or stole it from anybody. I stole this from me. The hour of trouble, chapter 1, verse 1 to 8, the speaker is the Shulamite. So in verse number 1, verse 2, let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth, for thy love is better than wine. Because of the savior of thy good ointments, the Shulamite is talking about the shepherd. She's already missing him, because where is she? Well, look at verse 4. Draw me, we will run after thee. The king hath brought me into his chambers. All right, she has been brought by Solomon into the palace. She's being groomed and prepared and wooed to be his wife. So she basically is a prisoner in Solomon's palace, but she's longing, she's speaking, she's looking for the shepherd. She says in verse 7, tell me whom my soul lovest, where thou feedest, where thou makest thy flock to rest at noon. Her heart is with the shepherd while her body is in the king's palace. Then that's the hour of trouble, verse 1 to 8. Then letter B is the hour of temptation. That's verse 9 to 11. And that's Solomon speaking to her. And again, there's nothing that says that Solomon, that's an interpretation. And so in verse 9, I have compared thee, O my love, to a company of horses and Pharaoh's chariots. Apparently that was probably something good back in that day. I wouldn't try using that line today. I have compared thee to the horses of Pharaoh's chariot. I don't think that would impress. many women today, so. But apparently that meant something. Thy cheeks are comely with rows of jewels, thy neck with chains of gold. We will make thee borders of gold with studs of silver. That's Solomon speaking. Scene number two then picks up in verse 12, and it's in the pavilion. In the pavilion. While Solomon is in the palace sitting at dinner, the Shulamite sneaks outside, and the shepherd shows up to visit her. Verse 12, while the king sitteth at his table, the woman says, my spikenard sendeth forth the smell, a bundle of myrrh is my well-beloved. She's sending smoke signals. She's giving signs that the coast is clear. Come and visit me now. So in the pavilion from chapter 1, verse 12, and we don't have time to read it, all the way down to chapter 2, verse 7, but there are two places in there where the shepherd is speaking. Look at the end of chapter 1. Verse 14, she says, my beloved is unto me as a cluster of campfire in the vineyards of En-Gedi. Behold, and then verse 15, behold, thou art fair, my love. That's the shepherd speaking. So you've got a conversation going back and forth. Verse 15, she calls him my beloved. Verse 15, thou art fair, my love. Then she says, behold, thou art fair, my beloved. These are two teenagers in love. Enough to make you gag. All right, this back and forth. Behold, thou art fair. Behold, no, thou art fair. And the shepherd says in chapter 2, verse 1, I am the rose of Sharon, the lily of the valleys. As a lily among the thorns, so is my love. Now he's speaking to her. My love among the daughters. And then she says, as the apple tree among the trees of the wood, so is my beloved. That the term beloved is always the Shulamite speaking to the shepherd. My love, the first two times again we saw, was the shepherd speaking to the Shulamite. Then the next 10 is Solomon speaking to her. So in the palace, that is the Shulamite speaking. Chapter 2, in the pavilion, excuse me. The Shulamite, other than those three verses where the shepherd is speaking. Then scene number 3. We come back to the palace. In chapter 2 and verse number 8, we come back to the palace. The Shulamite is speaking. The voice of my beloved, behold, he cometh, leaping upon the mountains, skipping upon the hills. My beloved is like, again, anytime you read my beloved, it's the Shulamite talking about the shepherd. She's back in the palace, but her thoughts are all for him. That's all she can think about day and night. She's back in the palace all the way to chapter 3, and again, we don't have time to read all the way through it. Chapter 3, verse 1, she has a dream of him. By night on my bed, I sought him whom my soul loveth. I sought him, but I found him not. It actually turns out to be a nightmare, the first of two. Because in this dream, he comes calling on her, and she, in the first dream, is not there, and then goes out looking for him and wandering the streets. In the second dream, in chapter 5, he comes, and she's too tired and just took her garments off and doesn't want to get up and answer the door, and then wakes up in her dream realizing she didn't open for the shepherd. So there's a lot of conversation. It's a very detailed play and song. So we see in the palace. Then scene number 4 takes us outdoors to the parade. All right, we're out at the parade in chapter 3 and verse number 6. Solomon is entering town. The Shulamite is in the palace, being held there basically. And Solomon comes back from one of his many excursions, many trips, and all the people as he's coming back. You remember the Jewish people shouting when David came in, Saul has slain his thousands, and David his 10,000s. Well, now, here's this same boot-licking group. And they're out there and Solomon's coming in. So they start. Who is this that cometh out of the wilderness like pillars of smoke, perfumed with myrrh and frankincense, with all powders of the merchant? Behold, his bed, which is Solomon's. 60 valiant men are about it, and the valiant of Israel. They all hold swords. They're praising Solomon. They're brown-nosing the king. And they're giving him all this glory. King Solomon made himself a chariot in the wood of Lebanon. He made pillars thereof of silver. Go forth, O ye daughters of Zion. Verse 11. Behold, King Solomon with his crown wherewith his mother crowned him in the day of his espousals and in the day of the gladness of his heart. In the parade, the spectators, you've got it there. The spectators are the ones speaking. And they're also trying to influence the Shulamite to love Solomon. That brings us to scene number 5. The longest scene. chapter 4 through chapter 8, verse number 4, and that again is back in the palace. That's how these plays work. Use the same backdrops quite a few times. Back in the palace, chapter 4, verse 1. Chapter 4, verse 1 to chapter 5, verse 1 is an hour of talk. Here is Solomon, this whole conversation, 4:1 to 5:1, is Solomon trying to butter her up. Behold, thou art fair, my love. Behold, thou art fair. Thou hast dove's eyes within thy locks. Thy hair is as a flock of goats. Again, I guess that's impressive. That appear from Mount Gilead. Thy teeth are like a flock of sheep that are even shorn, which came up from the washing, whereof everyone are twins and none. So Solomon just butters her up from chapter 4 all the way to chapter 5 and verse 1. Again, in verse 8, come with me from Lebanon, my spouse. Verse 9, thou hast ravished my heart, my sister, my spouse. Verse 10, how fair is thy love, my sister, my spouse. Verse 11, thy lips, O my spouse, drop as the honeycomb. Honey and milk are under thy tongue. Verse 12, a garden enclosed is my sister, my spouse. And in chapter 5 and verse 1 concludes this soothsaying by Solomon, I am come into my garden, my sister, my spouse. I have gathered my myrrh with my spices. I have eaten my honeycomb with my honey. I have drunk my wine with my milk. Eat, O friends, drink, yea, drink abundantly, O beloved. The hour of testimony begins in chapter 5 and verse 2. After Solomon gives all that he's got to try to win her heart, she says, I sleep, but my heart waketh. Again, another dream. It is the voice of my beloved that knocketh, saying, open to me, my sister, my love, my dove. The shepherd is, she's hearing the shepherd say this to him. I have put off my coat, she says. How shall I put it on? I have washed my feet. How shall I defile them? My beloved put his hand by the hole of the door, and my bowels were moved for him. I rose up to open to my beloved. My hands dropped with myrrh, and my fingers were sweet-smelling myrrh upon the handles of the lock. I opened to my beloved, but my beloved had withdrawn himself and was gone. Here she's giving her testimony that she still is faithful in loving the shepherd. She's telling this to the daughters of Jerusalem who ask her in verse number 9 of chapter 5, what is thy beloved more than another beloved, O thou fairest among women? What is thy beloved more than another beloved that thou dost so charge us? They're getting kind of tired of this. What's so good about him? What makes him any better than anybody else? They're kind of getting frustrated with it. And also in chapter 6 and verse 3, they say the same. No, that's not the right verse, is it? Oh, that's terrible. That's terrible because it's such a good... There's another place where she says that to them. All right, I'll have to find it later. But she gives her testimony. I am my beloved's and my beloved is mine. He feedeth among the lilies. So you can cross off that 6:3 because that's not the right one. Talk to my secretary about that again. So the hour of talk, the hour of testimony, then the hour of testing. Chapter 6, verse 4. Solomon begins to speak again. And again, how do you know that? Well, you've got to read it and interpret it. You've got to read it like, can't say read it like a blind man. You've got to be looking at the story, not seeing the scenes and not telling you who's reading on the script. On the script it says, all right, man speaks here, woman speaks there, man number two here. You don't have that here, so it's just interpretation to do it. But in chapter 6 and verse 4, it appears to be Solomon. Thou art beautiful, my love is Tirzah, comely as Jerusalem, terrible as an army with banners. Again, his flattering words. Solomon's flatteries from chapter 6, verse 4, down to chapter 7 and verse 9. He even is impressed with the roof of her mouth. Chapter 7, verse 9. The roof of thy mouth is like the best wine. He's pulling out all the stops. He's complimenting everything he can possibly think of. I've missed the part where he talks about the bottom of her feet. But he's even complimenting the roof of her mouth. What I'm just saying is Solomon is doing everything he can to win this woman's affection and break her love for the shepherd. That's exactly what the devil does for you and I. He'll say anything we want to hear if he can break our love and our faithfulness to the shepherd. So Solomon's flatteries and then the Shulamite's firmness, beginning in chapter 7, verse 10. She said, when he says all this stuff, she says to him, I am my beloved's. Solomon, knock it off. Try all you want to. I am my beloved's. I belong to the shepherd, and his desire is toward me. Come, my beloved, let us go forth into the field. Let us lodge in the villages. Let us get up early and go to the vineyards and see if the vine flourisheth. She's giving her firmness in her dedication all the way to chapter 8 and verse number 4. Then lastly is scene 6. And I couldn't find the P word for this. I tried, I used the thesaurus, I used everything. And all I could come up with is back in place. Back in place. You know where she is at the end? Where she started at the beginning before he took her to the palace. She's back home. Alright, she's back among her family. You can read the story in there. And she speaks from chapter 8, verse 5, all the way down to the last two verses. Notice verse 13, we don't have time to go through it. Who is he that cometh from the wilderness, leaning upon her beloved? I raise thee up, set me as a seal upon thine heart. Then she talks about her sister, to her brothers and all this. Verse 11, Solomon had a vineyard. My vineyard, which is mine, is before me. O thou Solomon, must have 1,000. Those that keep the fruit thereof, 200. Thou that dwellest in the gardens, the companions hearken to thy voice. Cause me to hear it. Make haste, my beloved, and be thou like to a roe or to a young hart upon the mountains or spices. I'm back home. Come and get me, shepherd. I've resisted the temptations of the prince. Shepherd, come and get me. And that's what we're saying right now. Shepherd, come and get us. We are resisting the flatteries of the devil. We're resisting the pushings of the daughters of Jerusalem. We are endeavoring to stay faithful in a foreign land. She was taken from her place to a different. We're endeavoring to stay faithful in not God's country. And I'm not talking about America, but I'm talking about the world. We are trying to stay faithful until the shepherd, like a roe, comes dancing through the wilderness and comes back and sets his feet on Mount Zion and comes back to get us. That's the story of the Song of Solomon. Phew. Let's stand together this evening. Father, thank you.